Welcome back to Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, joined on the telephone this weekend by Kathy Parker, Tuolumne County Superintendent of Schools. During the first segment, we talked a lot about the new budget for the state of California, its impacts, and some questions that still remain. Superintendent Parker, I'd like to look ahead now to the fall semester here locally. What can you tell us about what you know at this point and what things are being looked at?
Well, one thing that we do know is that we're going to have a lot of flexibility moving forward. We knew that when we made a decision to close schools, what we thought temporarily in March, we knew that we were going to have some kind of reopening plan. We were hoping within 2 weeks. It turned out that, of course, as everyone knows, we ended up closing for the remainder of the year. But that effort of what will schools look like in our county when we reopen has been an effort that has been going on all along. All school districts have some kind of task force or work group that is working on their own particular unique set of circumstances on what their reopen will look like. But all of them will be guided by a document that we have been working on over the last month or so, which is called the 2020-21 School Year Planning, a Guide to Address the Challenges of COVID-19. And by the time that this segment airs, that document will be out for public consumption. It was developed in cooperation with not only just all the district task force members and reopen work groups. It was also developed in cooperation and with approval from Tuolumne County Public Health, and specifically the Tuolumne County Public Health Officer, Dr. Liza Ortiz. And as we know, guidance from the state changes quite frequently. And so there's a lot of guidance in the document that speaks of mays, and it's not definitive, because we don't have definitive information yet. Just over the last week or so, we've had a call from the governor to start wearing masks in lots of different situations that we weren't necessarily masking. And so we need to be able to be flexible, and that's what this guide represents. And so I just want to talk about some of the questions that we are answering in this and that we are posing to students, families, and other community members is we consider who will be impacted by or can serve as partners in implementing any of the following measures that we list in the guide, including our partners through Cal OES, who is developing a system to give us quite a lot of PPE for use for students and for staff. The ability to implement or adhere to measures, how can we implement these things if we don't have the tools, and so how can we get the tools? How can we disseminate information? How can we gain resources and the ability to adhere or implement those new measures? We consider the negative and unintended consequences for any of the measures that we implement, and then we assess a variety of student needs. So as you know, we have medically fragile children we serve. We have very young children we serve, and so we're trying to address all of that in a very comprehensive guide.
What would you say are some of the other big takeaways from this guide that parents and students and teachers will be receiving?
I think a lot of it is, think of it as the guardrails, right, on a highway, right? So the guardrails go pretty far out. You don't ride against the guardrails usually. I hope not. But this is kind of the guardrail version of what schools will look like. And now what districts will do is take that guideline and adapt it to whatever particular situation fits their needs. And so, for example, in one section of the guide, we talk about what it may look like on campus and in the classroom, and we specifically talk about what people call social distancing. We also refer to it as physical distancing, and what that may look like. And so we spell that out. These are the things that are considered physical and social distancing, so that we can, first of all, dispel any myths or rumors that are out there about what that may look like, and also provide a lot of options of what some of the things may be implemented by a school district. Another section talks about how self-screening for symptoms is an important component of a return to school plan. We talk about transportation and how moving students from one location to another may look different. and how we're planning to work on our individual plans in order to make that happen. We talk about safety precautions, just general safety precautions, about everything from hand washing to sanitizing areas after use. Another section that I think will be very interesting to parents and community members is what are we considering our instructional scheduling options. So I know there's a lot of talk about, are we going full distance learning? Sometimes that decision is taken completely out of our hands. Sometimes that's a decision, as we saw this past spring, where we have no choice. We're going to have to do it. But we do look at a possible hybrid model, depending on the circumstances at the time when school opens. Now, everybody wants to open school in August, using the model that we have always used, which is mostly students return to school campuses 5 days a week, according to your school district's traditional calendar. And then we follow the local public health guidance and promote healthy hygiene, physical distancing. We have parents concerned about sending their kids back in that environment. And so what we're encouraging districts to do is to develop or take a look at their independent study programs that they offer and look at ways to make that more flexible. But we have to also be realistic that that might not be a reality for us for a variety of reasons. If our cases increase, if our hospitalizations increase, if for some reason we're having to really restrict students and staff contact, we might look at some of the other models in here, which are smaller cohorts and student groups, half-day schedules, block schedules, staggered or modified schedules. And I think a key piece of this is that we have to remember that this is a temporary situation. This is not what we're planning to implement forever. This would be a beginning of the school, a return to school process where we would kind of phase things in, think of it as a soft open, gather data, and then adjust from there.
Yeah, I think kind of one of the big questions that's still been out there is in regards to, and you mentioned things are still in flux. They could change by around August time, but could it potentially be an all distance learning? Could it be a hybrid, or could it be, you know, kids back 5 days a week? Are any of those off the table at this point in time?
None of them are off the table, and in fact, districts are formulating plans around all three scenarios. That's why it's really important for parents and community members, if you've been asked to complete a survey or to provide input at your school district, that you take an opportunity to do so. We really need to hear your voice. If you're asked to serve on a task force, we're asking you to make that time to serve on a task force because we need to have your input. Keeping in mind that as we move forward every week, we are meeting every week with public health and making decisions based on the best data that we have available.
At this point, are you anticipating that all the various schools, whether they're elementary or high school, you know, similar schools have kind of a same type plan, or could we see all kinds of different plans by different districts?
You might see some individualization based on our unique situations, but what we're trying to do is coordinate our plans so that we can minimize the impact on parents who might have children who attend, for example, a high school district and attend one of the elementary districts that feeds into that high school. We know that childcare issues are a big concern for families, so that's one of the main reasons that we're trying to coordinate those services. We're also trying to coordinate what we do because some of the extracurricular activities, such as youth sports, we all interact with each other in youth sports, either through the elementary sports programs or through the high school sports programs. And just recently, and I'm like sure to send this to you, youth sports guidelines by all five county local public health officers has been released. So that includes those that are in some of our leagues, such as Stanislaus and San Joaquin counties. They've all released a statement regarding youth sports and the conditioning that happens during the summer in order to keep students and their staff safe.
So are youth sports potentially going to happen this fall?
As I've mentioned, everything is on the table. Mm-hmm. And so one of the, for high school sports, CIF is the agency that will be making a lot of decisions and providing guidance. And as I've mentioned, everything is kind of up in the air. We know that public health right now at the state level is revamping their public sector or their sector guidelines for all of the different pieces of our community. And so once those guidelines come out and they're updated, we'll take a look at those and see how we can move forward in a safe manner.
You mentioned, too, about a week ago, Governor Newsom came out and said everyone should be wearing a mask in public places, especially where social distancing is not possible. Do you know at this point how that translates to schools?
No, we don't. And in fact, when the guidance came out, there was a little footnote on the bottom of the guidance, if people noticed it, and it excluded schools. But it didn't describe exactly what did you mean by schools. Do you mean district offices where there are no students and there's business being conducted and it's more like an office environment? Did you mean fields? Did you mean? And so what happened over the weekend was that footnote was removed from that guidance. And the explanation provided to us is they were reworking the sector guidance on all of those different areas and that it would be addressed in that particular document. So we do not know at this time if there's going to be a requirement for students, for staff, or for both.
Do you know at this point, like, what you'd be looking at for final decisions for districts ahead of the next school year? Would it be an August type thing?
Well, we're hoping that we can have enough information by the mid to end of July to really firm up a lot of plans. As you know, it's a lot to organize and to coordinate everything from transportation routes to food services to instruction that has to be done beforehand. And so we're hoping by mid-July to the end of July we'll have some better ideas about moving forward. We have to use August, you know, around 22nd or so, the third week in August as hopefully our starting point, as that's the hopefully the time we can reopen. But as we saw this past spring, we saw that everything changed in a matter of days. And we just have to be understanding that we might have a really good plan in place and everything put in order to open the way that we want to open, and then everything could change in a heartbeat depending on how our community responds to what's happening in our numbers, and not just the numbers of exposures, but also the numbers of hospitalizations that are happening as well.
Need to take one more break. We're talking with Tuolumne County Superintendent of Schools, Kathy Parker, on this weekend's Motherlode Views. Motherlode Views brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our final segment is coming up in just a minute.